On this Sunday after Christmas, I invite you to hear these words from the Gospel of Matthew, starting with verse 13 of Matthew chapter 2. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time that he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went to live in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, "He will be called a Nazarene." So here we are on the Sunday after Christmas. And I'm guessing that quite a few of us are still in the process of recovering from all of the things that have been a part of our Christmas activities over these recent days. You know the things that I'm talking about. I'm referring to all of those huge parties that we have attended, all of the family gatherings that have included huge holiday meals with all of those traditional foods that have become so special to us, and all of the seasonal goodies that we have been participating and partaking in. Those things are great, but they can frankly wear us out. There are maybe a few of us who are already making New Year's resolutions that include losing those extra pounds that we have put on over the past month or so. Let's be honest. As much as we look forward to this annual celebration of Christmas and all that it brings to us, there is at least a part of us that is likely to say, "Phew, I'm sure glad that's over for another year." Even though Christmas has come and gone for another 12 months, let me ask what might sound like a rather peculiar question. How does Christmas work? I guess what I'm really asking is, will there be any lingering, lasting effects for us from this recent Christmas? Will there be any changes brought about in how we live our lives based on what we have experienced of the coming of the Christ child? Or is it just business as usual that we return to now that Christmas is gone? Even though we've examined again the tranquil, peaceful picture of Mary and Joseph out in that stable behind the inn of Bethlehem, and as we have rejoiced with the shepherds who were the first to come and see for themselves the things that God had told them about through the angels, we recognize that there are some of the details surrounding the birth of our Savior that are not quite as peaceful and quiet as we often think. As we've read Matthew's account of those wise men coming in search of the newborn king of the Jews and of their visit to King Herod, we realize that there are some surprising and some downright alarming aspects of what took place when Jesus was born, such that we are stunned by the bluntness and the harshness of the things that Matthew describes. As we've read his account of what followed the birth of Jesus, we're shocked to hear that danger and death are also a part of this amazing story of Jesus' birth. It seems, as we reflect on what Matthew has told us, that it must be true that Satan knew exactly what was at stake when God chose to send his son to become one of us, and that he was prepared to do everything within his power to stop Christmas before it could go any farther. Think about it this way. Most couples would not start out on a 120-mile road trip with a 9-months pregnant, soon-to-be mother riding along in the family car. And they sure would not start a trip of that length with a 9-months pregnant woman riding on the back of a donkey. And if you were forced to make such a trip, our experience would tell us that you certainly would make arrangements. You would try to make sure that when you got to your destination, there would be lodging for you there, particularly with the imminent birth of Mary's baby. You wouldn't just hope for the best and see how it worked out when you got there. Now, of course, saying such a thing is reflecting that we think like 21st century Westerners, not like first century residents of Galilee or Judea. I saw a Facebook cartoon a week or two ago that maybe some of you have seen as well that reflects what I'm describing of the lack of preparations that had been made when they got to Bethlehem. It was a picture of Mary and Joseph in the stable. Mary's back was turned to Joseph, and she looked rather upset with him. And Joseph is saying, "Mary, I told you that I'm sorry I didn't make reservations." And the caption below the cartoon read, "The real reason that that was a silent night." The reality is that life was far different then than we know it to be today. It was a far different set of circumstances that Joseph and Mary were facing as they came to Bethlehem. And Mary was to give birth to that son out there in the stable, surrounded by their own animal and the other animals of the innkeeper and others who were staying there were lodged in that same stable. Compared to today's birthing centers, the word primitive is probably overly generous for the circumstances that Mary was faced with when she was to give birth to this baby boy. And then there's the detail that Matthew includes in his account about the insane jealousy of King Herod. When the wise men came and showed up at the palace seeking that newborn king of the Jews, Herod tried his best to eliminate this potential threat to his power before that Christ child could grow up beyond infancy. We're not given any specific information about how many innocent baby boys from the area around Bethlehem were killed when Herod's soldiers arrived on their murderous mission. All of them killed because of Herod's insane jealousy, but scholars have estimated that it may have been several dozen little boys were put to death. How does Christmas work given that bloody history of what took place in and around Bethlehem? From the details that Scripture gives us, it seems that the first Christmas almost ended before it got started. If we're honest, maybe we have to admit that there are times when Christmas doesn't really happen for us either. Of course, we go through the motions of exchanging gifts and going to seasonal parties and doing all of the other things like sending out greeting cards and wishing one another a Merry Christmas that have been the traditions that we have observed over these many years. But that's not Christmas, that's just the holidays. Like the wise men, we have to detour around the dangers that surround this season that we have just passed. If we're going to find Jesus in the midst of all that we do each year at this time, we are challenged to find a different way. So how does Christmas work? It works when we remember that now, just as was true some 2,000 years ago, this can be a dangerous time. It's dangerous because it evokes dreams and hopes that are not necessarily a part of God's plan for us. Things like materialism and ambition and self-importance are not limited to people like King Herod. Those things are alive and well in the culture and society that we live in as well. Whenever we take our eyes off the Christ child and allow the trappings of Christmas to become overly important to us, we are standing on dangerous ground. One of my favorite Christmas carols that we sing each year during these days and weeks surrounding the celebration of Jesus' birth is, "O Little Town of Bethlehem." Do you remember how the last line of verse 1 in that Christmas carol goes? It ends by saying, "The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight." I'm pretty sure that we have an easier time identifying with the hopes of Christmas than we do with the fears. I'm guessing that what the author of that beautiful Christmas carol had in mind was that the coming of God's Son in Bethlehem's stable was not a welcome event by everyone. It was a fearful development for at least some. Just check out the record of King Herod's reaction if you have any doubts. Ambition and self-importance and the thirst for power must be dethroned in a person's life if Christmas is truly going to work in our lives. Jesus must become the top priority for us when we honor Christ and not just the culture of Christmas. Then Christmas really does begin to work. But we also honor Christmas when we allow the message to take place that we're not always comfortable hearing or responding to. When we allow it to move us in directions that we would prefer not to go. The verses we've read today make it clear that for reasons of safety, the angel told Joseph that he needed to get moving. He needed to get Mary and the baby out of where they were staying and head to Egypt. In fact, the message from the angel was so urgent that it tells us that they left Bethlehem in the middle of the night. So too in our experience, the Lord sometimes wants to lead us into unknown territory, into directions that we would choose not to go if we had our own way. Sometimes we would be so much more comfortable staying where we are and not venturing into the unknown or the unfamiliar, places where we have not been before. After all, it is so easy to get settled in where we happen to be. And it's so hard to pick up and to follow wherever it is that God might be choosing to lead us. But it's as we head into the unknowns of life that we find God's peace and joy. Many of you know that home for Linda and I is over in Red Wing. We've called that town home for over 18 years now. So I guess it wouldn't be hard to say We like it here. And we're comfortable staying here in our retirement until health factors force us to move into a retirement community somewhere. But that would take interim ministry settings off the table if we were to do that. Now, please hear me when I say I'm not looking for a pat on the back. But if we were determined to stay where it's comfortable, we'd never have the opportunity of coming and getting to know and love you folks here in River Falls. I'm pointing out simply that there are times when God asks us to leave the comfortable and the familiar and to step into an area or into a circumstance that is perhaps an unknown and even a bit scary to us. He does this so that we might discover something better. Even in Joseph and Mary's lives, it seems likely that they had begun to think of Bethlehem as home. If you read the story carefully, you find that the wise men came to visit the house where Joseph and Mary and the baby were living. They didn't come to the stable. Even though we tend to think that those wise men showed up minutes or maybe an hour or two after the shepherds had arrived, it's far more likely that they arrived months after the birth. Why else would Herod order all the boys 2 years and younger to be put to death? It seems altogether likely that Joseph and Mary had come to know God well enough by this point so that they were content to stay right where they were until God directed them to go someplace else. What foreign places might the Lord be directing us to go? Uncharted waters are usually pretty scary. But that's part of what Christmas is about. It's about letting Jesus take our hand and leading us along the journey that he has in mind for us, even if we can't know the ultimate destination. A few years ago, a pastor named Mike Iaconelli told the story of a deacon who was serving in the church he was pastor of. That deacon was not doing a very good job serving in that role. And so the pastor went to that obstinate deacon and wanted to get him involved in something that would be moving him in the direction of serving others. And so he said, "I have a group of young people who go to the nursing home every month, and they put on a worship service in the afternoon at the chapel there in the building. Would you be willing to drive the kids to and from that nursing home so that they can all get there safely?" It wasn't really the deacon's thing to do such a thing, but he reluctantly agreed that I guess I could get the kids there and back. The first Sunday that the deacon drove the kids to that nursing home, he stood at the back of the chapel with his arms folded across his chest, watching what the kids were doing as they led that worship service. All of a sudden, he felt someone tugging on his sleeve. He looked down and saw that there was an elderly man sitting in a wheelchair who was trying to get his attention. And even though there were no words exchanged, that elderly man reached up and grabbed hold of the deacon's hand and didn't let go. They held hands through the entire service. He didn't know how to respond other than to allow that old man to have the comfort of another person holding on to his hand. The next month and the next and the next, the same thing happened. No words were ever exchanged, but the deacon and the old elderly man in the nursing home sort of became friends through that process of physically connecting to one another by holding hands during the chapel services. But then, 1 month, there was no presence of that old man there at the chapel. The deacon went out to inquire about him and was told, "He's down the hall, right-hand side, third door. I'm sorry to tell you that he's dying. He's unconscious, but if you want to go down and pray with him, that would be all right." So the deacon made his way down to the room and went in and saw that there were all sorts of tubes and wires hanging over the bed connected to this elderly man. The deacon took hold of his hand and prayed for him, asking that God would receive him into his presence, that God would bring him from this life into the next, and that he would bless him with eternal blessings. As soon as he finished praying, the old man in the bed squeezed his hand, letting him know that he had heard the prayer that had been offered. And the deacon was so moved by what had just happened that tears began streaming down his face. And he left the bed and the elderly man and stumbled out into the hallway, where he literally bumped into that elderly man's daughter who was just coming in to the room. The daughter said to him, "He's been waiting for you. He told me that he didn't want to die until he had the chance to hold the hand of Jesus one more time." The crusty old deacon was shocked. "What do you mean?" he asked. She answered, "Well, my father would tell me that once a month Jesus came to this place. He would take my hand for a whole hour. I don't want to die until I have the chance to hold Jesus' hand once more." Christmas works when we allow Jesus to take us into unfamiliar and maybe uncomfortable settings. Maybe it seems uncomfortable to us. Maybe it's a place like a nursing home, or to some other place that we would prefer not to go. Maybe that unfamiliar territory would even seem a bit bizarre, like an attitude adjustment, or developing a more generous spirit, or giving a helping hand to someone that we've simply ignored in the past. Whatever it might be, are you and I willing to go wherever the Lord might choose to send us? Even if that place is an unfamiliar and frightening place to us, like Egypt must have been to Joseph and Mary when they got God's marching orders. The point is, wherever we go, we are the hands of Jesus to others. And when that happens, Christmas truly does happen all over again. That's how Christmas works in our lives. Maybe it seems strange to focus all of this attention on Christmas when it's all over for another year, but that's really the point. If Christmas is going to have any impact in our lives as it's intended to, then the season that we have just passed through is not just a once-a-year event that we put on the shelf until next December rolls around. Christmas must be the gift that keeps on giving all year long. May we allow Christmas to be exactly that for each one of us in the weeks and the months of this new year that lie before us.